So efficient.
Okay, next one will be... well, Diana, I don't know if you remember last year we had a talk improvised by someone that calculated the carbon footprint impact of your RSS feeds, and whenever you call Spotify or whatever to listen to your podcast. Diana's going to talk about something similar, because whenever we make a request, we actually have carbon footprint, and she's going to talk about how we optimize that and not make unnecessary requests.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you. That's right. So basically, we are going to talk about how to reduce all the data bloat and carbon impact in sustainability. So let's get into it. I'm Diana. I'm a developer experience engineer at Victoria Metrics. And also, I'm an OpenTelemetry member and contributor. And I'm a co-organizer of Cloud Native Days Romania and a co-lead of CNCF Merge for Neurodiversity Group. So when I first heard about Green Software Foundation, actually, that struck me like a very, very cool. They have a very, very cool mission that is among the first one actually is to minimize the carbon footprint. So their objective is to use less physical resources, less energy, and use that energy more intelligently. They were established in 2021. But they grew pretty fast. Last year, actually, I saw the first time a presentation from one of their members, and it was something that really resonated with me. Because in observability, we don't talk that often about sustainability, or we should talk about sustainability more often. So I started to dig around a bit and understand a bit backtracking to the Green Software Foundation, if there are any protocols or standards that talk about carbon footprint or energy or anything that could give me some standardization around it. So there are like three protocols or three standards. So is the one that talks about the greenhouse gas protocol. So this is like a globally recognized foundational framework for measuring and reporting emissions. Then is the ISO 14064, which is an international standard that provides principles, requirements for the quantification and reporting of greenhouse gas emissions at an organizational level. And it's aligned with the first protocol. And the last one is ISO 14067, which is a standard that focuses on the carbon footprint of products across their life cycle, which can be applied to a specific software product or service. So why is this interesting for developers, or why is this interesting for observability? It's interesting because besides these protocols, the Green Software Foundation actually created, they kind of like made up this specification called software carbon intensity, which is something that it's pretty cool. And it's used in another CNCF project called Kepler. That is actually, in simple terms, it measures how much carbon your software emits per unit of work. So I'm not going to stick around too much on it. I just wanted to make like something really clear. So here in this formula, basically what it says is that the E stands for energy consumed by the software, I for carbon intensity of the energy, M is the embodied carbon, hardware manufacturing life cycle, and R is the functional unit, request, user, API call. And the interesting fact here is that the SCI is a rate, not a total, which makes it comparable, trendable, and observable. So I found that really interesting because it would be nice if also it can be applied to observability. So if we're getting a bit more creative, I think we can totally map this type of specification to observability signals. Right, so this is like a note for observability people, or anyway software developers, if we are working in this area. So another interesting thing is actually the sustainability paradox that is actually bears a link with what I'm saying here. The sustainability paradox basically is something like, okay, the systems become more sustainable or more efficient and also become cheaper, but in the same time, because they are becoming cheaper, people tend to use them more. So there's an increase in the usage, which drives obviously the carbon footprint. So in a way, it's like a rebound effect, or it's also called the Jevons paradox. And it's interesting because also it can be applied to observability. So the same, like, for example, we use observability to measure systems. So, you know, to, we are tracking so many things, metrics, logs, traces, etc. And that will definitely improve a system's reliability, optimization, but in the same time will increase the compute, right? So we'll increase the storage, we'll increase the energy consumption, obviously will drive the carbon footprint. So unless we are, you know, architectural, if we don't really like, if you don't, we don't have like a proper sustainability, let's say, principles or architecture or anyway like a roadmap how to do this properly, obviously the observability can also backfire. And right now I'm going to use something like I'm going to take a use case from Victoria Metrics because we also have been using specific, let's say, best practices also in software and also related to observability. So for example, green coding practices. So basically referring to the programming techniques to reduce the enlarged memory data structures, unnecessary loops or API calls, basically anything that will drive the consumption. Also focusing on the code bloat, so preventing code bloat. Think about the code inefficiency, and it's something that we, like from the developer side, we're trying to focus on refactoring of the codes, rewriting the codes to make it simple, maintainable. Think about, I don't know, instead of running a very bloated PR, just structure it really simple in many chunks that can be run fast and also solved a lot faster. Another thing will be the careful usage of external libraries, because, for example, you know, if we are also using libraries, they come with like pre-built functionality, and we don't like use a lot of the extra features that they come with it. So it's kind of like interesting. I mean, it's like a best practice to be careful when to use those. And in terms of language choice, we use Go for simplicity and efficiency. This is like across the solutions we are working on. And we also dog food our own observability. So we are using the dashboards, we are using the metrics, we are using specific tools that will show us exactly how our deployments are doing, when it's time, I don't know, maybe to drive the costs, and anyway, the monitoring actually helps us as well. So because of that, like code refactoring, because of applying all these sustainability features, we are actually seeing in the benchmarks a lot of reduction in energy, a lot of reduction in hardware, which leads to actually an improvement into the memory, disk space, and query latency. So that's something that definitely also has like, I don't know, like an effect on both sides, because it also provides our products to actually be better and consume less. And here I wanted to just show you something. You can scan the QR. So here, for example, this is a live playground that you can access. That's from Victoria Metrics, which is an open source project for a time series database. And here we're going to go directly to Cardinality Explorer. I'm just going to slide here. Right, so from Cardinality Explorer, you can take a look at the metrics that have the highest number of series, that are the most expensive metrics, basically. They will be the right on top. And you can also see when they were last requested. So for example, you have a metric that is like the first one and was never requested, then it means probably you don't use it at all and you should get rid of it. Also, you can get into the labels with the highest number of unique values, and those that come on top are actually the labels that will multiply the time series and will basically drive the cardinality high up. And then you could drill down, for example, into each metric, into the label with the highest number of series, and understand exactly how your metrics is composed. So for example, if you have a label that's very high and is driving the cardinality up, you can get rid of it, for example. You can also go to top queries, so are the ones that take the most time to execute. And we can show, for example, okay, how long did it last? If it's something that definitely drives the cardinality up, you can troubleshoot around that. Use your own dashboards on how to prevent this in the future. Obviously, go back to the codes and try to refactor a bit. So this is like a couple of features that definitely could reduce the data bloats inside your observability. So what other recommendation we use from our side, obviously, is to observe and optimize the cloud resource usage, decommission, obviously, any stale or orphaned resources, anything that you don't use, downscale the instances, the GPUs, disks and network. Also use intelligent autoscaling for Kubernetes, managed or serverless platforms. Use the scheduling workloads for off-peak or green regions. And also use spots and preemptible instances for non-critical tasks and batch jobs. And also, you can also use auto-remove inactive test or dev resources. And obviously, if you have in-house deployments, you can also optimize those. Right, so another interesting, application of sustainability that I saw recently was about Kubernetes. Actually, it was a talk that was given by at another conference that was quite interesting. They took actually the 9 R's of circular economy and they applied it to Kubernetes. So the 9 R's of circular economy, they are these ones that I published there. So it's like to refuse, so avoid what you don't need, basically. Rethink, use smarter and share more. Reduce, use fewer resources. And repair, fix instead of replacing. Refurbish, upgrade old stuff. Remanufacture, rebuild using parts, etc. So the whole idea actually was taken. So the whole idea of the 9 R's in circular economy was transposed in for Kubernetes. And the whole thesis was like, okay, we can take the same R's, maybe make it into 6, and really make them customized for Kubernetes. And I think that can definitely be applied the same for observability because it stands, you know, to the same mission of sustainability. So we can try that, for example, in this way. So from the 9 R's, we can reduce to 6 to have the refuse, reduce, repair, resize, reschedule, and repeat. And we could try to see how it would look like for observability. So for example, to refuse or reduce, basically we don't need to collect the metrics that we don't need. So for example, we have the Cardinality Explorer, such a tool. You see, like, you can identify the metrics that are most expensive. Basically, probably you don't need to use. So you can think about reducing that or eliminating those type of metrics. For repairing, you could apply fixing noisy alerts, broken SLOs, inefficient queries. And for resizing, you can use rollups, downsampling, stream aggregation. And for rescheduling, definitely you can focus on change when and how often you observe, and lower the scrape frequency. That's something you can also see, for example, in Prometheus, in Victoria Metrics, and any other, let's say, observability projects. Use adaptive sampling, on-demand deep diagnostics. And for repeats, obviously, you can use reuse proven signals, queries, dashboards, alert patterns across services and teams instead of reinventing them. That will obviously be also very useful for the teams themselves. So I was mentioning at the beginning a project, an open source project called Kepler, and I think this was probably the talk that was given last year. So Kepler is a CNCF project that uses CBPF and system counters to estimate energy use of containers, pods, virtual machines, and processes in Kubernetes environment. Is definitely one of the most interesting projects out there in terms of using properly and reducing the carbon footprint, and also has like very cool dashboards and can be used for this specific purpose. Another one of my favorite projects at the moment is OpenTelemetry. That is definitely doesn't have anything to do that much with sustainability at the moment, but because it's linked to the tracing, collecting telemetry across software systems, it would be nice if we can also think in those terms of green observability. So OpenTelemetry for sure here, the community is helpful. For sure, we can adopt many of, let's say principles or many of the projects, many of the lessons learned from the projects that, for example, were given today. And definitely, OpenTelemetry can help with that. So I would like to see a use case for sustainability within OpenTelemetry as well. Another open source project that doesn't have anything to do with OpenTelemetry, sustainability, is actually Open Climate Fix. It's a climate tech nonprofit using open source AI and machine learning to improve renewable energy forecasting. And I think it's really nice in terms of how this type of projects can influence the observability projects. In terms of, we can collect information or we can exchange ideas, how they are using machine learning, how they use open source AI to do that, and we can apply them in observability as well. And another one that's has some effects for observability is Cloud Carbon Footprint, which is an open source tool to measure, monitor, and help reduce the cloud infrastructure carbon emissions. So I think because observability is still yet to mature in that sense, so it's still yet to take more steps into the sustainability, into the whole energy consumption and carbon footprint, we definitely need a lot more help and a lot more communication to apply definitely other best practices that were used in other projects. And obviously, from Kepler, we can also learn what they are doing as well. So what I wanted to say, the takeaways, definitely that's not on the board, but definitely what I would like to see is the standard that Green Software Foundation created that we discussed at the beginning, SCI, to be applied into observability. So it would be something nice to have, definitely something to think about. Think about, for example, if the SCI would be an SLI, a service level indicator for green observability. That will be something interesting to think about. Also, I think definitely, and at least in the sustainability meetings I've been with the community, is that observability companies should start applying these actions since day one. So reducing the energy and definitely think about the energy, the usage of energy more intelligently. And sustainability is definitely something that is spread through company culture. So it's definitely something that, you know, a company should think about and also distributed in terms of how it's applied by its employees, developers, etc. And yes, we are all responsible to maintain it. And you could obviously discuss this, take as a homework, as a project, discuss it with some coworkers. For example, I've seen other people come with a GitHub project and discuss it in a sustainability meeting. And this is how everything starts. Obviously, I left some resources there and on my GitHub repo, that was mentioned in the first slide, you could download the presentation that's here. And thank you very much. If you have any questions.
We have 5 minutes for questions. I just want to say that we use big parametrics at work, and for example, a feature that made a giant difference is the streaming aggregation. We had, let's say, 2, sometimes 5 million samples per second ingested, and a lot of that was useless cardinality from labels that we didn't need, and with 5 lines of YAML, we reduced our ingestion rates in half without changing anything, without having to convince the colleagues to fix their metrics. I just change a YAML file, and 5 minutes later, it's done. So that's wonderful for us, please.
Yeah, thank you. So yeah, to reiterate basically what was said, that they use at work Victoria metrics for, and especially stream aggregation, that basically will reduce the high cardinality, you know, refactor the codes, and not worry about having high cardinality. And thank you for the comments. Actually, it's an improvement from Prometheus, and give it a try.
But I'm just wondering what gives more impact? Is it the fact that we can do more with the same assets we have? Because if we reduce the traffic, then we don't have to invest in more infrastructure to raise traffic, because we actually can use the same infrastructure. So the fact that we don't need to upgrade the hardware has more impact than the number of processes that, because I imagine in terms of energy, how much energy the processors are going to use is small comparison to the amount of energy that you need to extend your infrastructure.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you think the impact would be? Like, where is it more pronounced?
Mm-hmm. Right. So if I understood correctly, it's like what's the impact? Where is more noticeable if you're actually using the same resources? Instead of actually going for a new type of architecture or a new architecture and updating that architecture. Well, you really, that's why we are also advising our users is use like the minimum, let's say hardware or the minimal setup that you think about, right? So don't go, I know I'm ingesting, I don't know, thousands of metrics, I need to go for the cluster, I need to do that, I have to have like a massive architecture. No, you don't. Try it with like a single nodes, try it with something really simple, and then understand how everything evolves, right? So don't jump to the very complicated architecture just because, you know, the company looks big, or, you know, the ingestion rate, and think small, test with that modest infrastructure, and definitely think twice in you know, jumping overboard and trying to buy new stuff. It's something that I think it's probably in the modern days, but we're always trying to upgrade, or, you know, just the next thing that's more shiny and fancy, instead of being modest and reuse what we have. And definitely we see a lot more in terms of energy, that's more convenient. Keep it